Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom, we're off and running now, midday point of the 13th of August, 2025. Our friends at the National Weather Service, you know they do that twice a day summary, and they say there's a chance we could get, and these are their words, a rim shot, and that would be thunderstorms coming off the Mogollon Rim. And typically, as they accurately point out, when we do get violent storms, more than likely they are of the rim shot variety coming that way.
Coming down off of the rim.
Yeah. But boy, do we need the moisture. But I just hope it's not violent. I hope we get just a good rain. All right, Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. We're part of the Bustos Media Center. 5 radio stations here under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. We are we're 15 years with our radio program at the end of this year. And you can find all of our programs going back to the beginning of the radio project at buckmastershow.com. Also, when we do our telephone interviews, the live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, we welcome back to the program Paul Cunningham, the Ward 2 Tucson City Councilman, Democrat, who was in the news over the weekend. I know I read about it in the Arizona Daily Star Sunday morning that Councilman Cunningham did confront a shoplifter. He was on his way to get a prescription at Walgreens. Councilman Cunningham, former probation officer, Army veteran, decided he had to take action. This was literally happening, and I've seen the pictures right in front of him. This man was just filling a bag with liquor and just ready to walk out. And Councilman Cunningham was with me in studio, decided he just had to take action. What should we know more about this incident? First of all, welcome back to the program.
First of all, I don't want to overplay this. I don't want any... Again, I wouldn't ask anybody to put their self in harm's way. We're lucky nobody else got hurt, and I'm just happy. I'm just very grateful that it's done. So I don't really know what I've kind of tried to put out a statement and just tell people, look, take care of yourselves, be safe, and kind of that's the end of it. I don't really. It's all kinds of different emotions and stuff when things happen.
But the man would have run right by you. You were between the, I'm not going to use the word gentleman, individual and the door.
I played it in my head multiple times, and whether or not I would have done the same, probably most likely would have, but I just wouldn't. I don't want to encourage people for that. We don't need folks. We need to work on retail theft in other ways. So I just want to tell everyone that don't put yourself in harm's way. People have a property, but at the same time, I understand there's frustrations out there with lawlessness and other things. So that's all I really want to say about it.
Just one more item. Did your training in the military, and you spent, I think, almost a decade in the Army National Guard. Did some of that come back to you?
I don't know. I probably, but I mean, who knows? I mean, it all happened. It was like a 15-second thing. So. Yeah.
All right. An item that you had mentioned when you were, we did a full hour with you in July with Ted Maxwell, General Ted Maxwell, Southern Arizona Leadership Council, and you had said at the time that you would be introducing a motion at the council meeting to reinstate bus fares. That's not going to happen. Are we making a big mistake going down that road?
I think we need to consider the fact that the bus is under-resourced and that there's the elephant in the room is quite a bit of resolve to keep the buses free. But I think we could balance it and have a free fare program, but also do some things like there's a tappers, which you have to tap your pass on the door for the doors to open. I think that's a safety feature we could look at. I think there's other safety features out there. I think there's quite a few people that are just very concerned about some of the open use drug use that we're seeing at bus stops, some of the violent instances we're seeing in bus stations or in bus areas.
With knives. Knives are in some cases actually axes.
Well, yeah. So we've engaged some folks, different folks around the city at bus stops and at camps and stuff, and they do have knives and hatchets, and so hatchets. It's just kind of it's very concerning to people, and so I think that mixed with some of the overall retail theft and some other things, that there's a lot of people hoping that we can work with the lawlessness, and I think that's related to different things. So for me, if we were going to put bus fares in, we're going to reinvest in the bus. We're also facing a fiscal crisis with the city. We're looking at a $20, $30 million deficit next year. I don't know what the numbers are yet. It's a little early in the fiscal year to kind of project. But when you have those things in mind, you've got to think about what our priorities are. Look, I want anybody who needs to get to work and needs to get somewhere, and we can make it somewhat easy for them to get there for free or even for a very, very minimal cost. Remember, we had a $15 a month low income program before we even instituted bus fares. So I think there's some moving parts to this, and I want to be fair. Like, there's a good 15,000 to 16,000 working people in this town that rely on that bus every day, and they really do enjoy the free fare. So I think we have to look at it holistically. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I think we need to we need that opportunity and ability to increase those resources for the bus. The other piece is that the fare structure, the way it's set up with the feds, is we can't now offer enhanced pay bus system. So because we don't have any fare at all, we can't offer like premium services or anything like that, because it's supposed to be connected to a base fare and a multiplier. This really affects us in Sunban, which is for our accessible people, our folks that have disabilities. And so the Sunban situation is that we have this fixed route for Sunban, and right now we're probably better off, or we could be better off, if we could offer some level of pay for service like a accessible Uber, but that would require a premium cost and we can't charge it. So we're stuck with this fixed route. So if you're a person who is like a paraplegic or something like that, or you're wheelchair bound, just think about this. For you to use the restroom, for you to do anything else takes 10, 20, 30, sometimes 45 minutes longer than anybody else. And you're told to wait at this window for 15 minutes and then you have to leave really quick. You can't. You've now missed your bus and your whole day's wrecked. Mm-hmm. And not only that, it's like a 3-hour window for you to go from point A to point B. And not always. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I'm not trying to knock our Sunban drivers. They're awesome. They do a great job. Most of them take care of the people that are involved. Mm-hmm. And Sunban's a great program. But we could probably tweak that program and offer $5 to $10 dial a ride as a premium service if we had some type of base fare. And those are some of the things that would help us save that money. Remember, of the $70 million we invest into transit, some of that is Sunban and some of that is the streetcar, which along the streetcar route, some of the sales tax revenues we've been able to put in, it kind of paid for itself. And we could probably put the tapper onto the SunLink and leverage the U of A for passes at $3 or $4 a student per semester or something and do a little better on the revenue capture. But at the end of the day, that big albatross is the SunTran function. And we're having way too many problems at bus stops and on buses right now to justify not being able to handle it. I will couch that by saying, look, there's no study out there that says we're going to lower the crime rate.
Well, that was my question. Do you believe that if we were to suddenly say from now on no free buses, would that change the crime situation?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, it's about resources. I don't know if one's directly related to the other. Is it possible that indirectly we'll see a reduction overall? Yeah, but there's no proven study to say that. And I'm not going to say that definitively. Best guess, it might help, but I don't think that's the be all end all. I don't think, hey, we're going to charge for fares and now nobody's going to get hurt on the bus. That's a ridiculous way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. All right. When we come back with Paul Cunningham, Tucson City Councilman, what's next now after Project Blue was unanimously taken off the table by Councilman Cunningham and his colleagues. It's Buckmaster Midweek Edition. We'll be right back.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in Southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in Southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our midweek edition. Coming up, our Friday Focus interview, Tim Tomier, the Tucson City Manager, will be here with me, and Jim Nintzel will be joining me in the questioning. Jim from TucsonSentinel.com. Paul Cunningham is here, Tucson City Councilman. Councilman, did Tim Tomier do a good job? He organized those three Project Blue kind of listening sessions, and a lot of people were wondering, did he do the right thing? Let's put it that way.
I assume he did. I'm sure it came from someone's direction. It didn't come from mine. I mean, we didn't participate in those. I actually came out against the groundswell was really significant against Project Blue really early. So I actually told the Blue organizers that it was really going to be a heavy lift to organize any type of vote under the circumstances that it had been rolled out.
Sure.
And so I just said, we probably need to back out, reset, take a look at other things, but I wasn't going to vote for it and I wasn't going to be a part of the negotiations. Mm-hmm. So I kind of did that really early. I think there are pieces to AI centers being a fact of life, and at some point there probably will be one built here in Tucson, and hopefully it's a good deal for the city. I mean, you're always looking for that good deal for the city. Mm-hmm. But for me, I kind of removed myself. As far as Tim goes, I think he did fine. He built one of the best municipal utilities, Tucson Water, in the country a few years ago. So I have no issues with how Tim conducted himself or how he conducts himself, and I think he's a I really think he's going to be a great city manager. Mm-hmm. We've had a couple of public stumblings in the first year or two, but that doesn't mean that he's not doing his job and doing it well.
Rex Scott, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, will be seated where you are in 24 hours here on the program. Paul Cunningham, he has an op-ed in the Tucson Sentinel criticizing, saying that the first public hearing, I think specifically, things kind of got out of hand.
Well, I mean, when that many people fill the room and they're that vocal and verbal about their opposition, it can become a pretty significant situation. I just felt it was important to state your position early in this situation. It was pretty interesting to me that people from different walks of life, different political views, all had pretty unilateral opposition to the project. And so for me, that was enough to say, well, we probably haven't, this is probably not good timing, and we probably need to reset and take a look at what it is we really want, and that's okay. As far as the hearing on, you know, when we officially voted against it, again, I'd go back to saying, hey, look, it was important to state your position early and just and try to be as pragmatic as possible. If we do have big water users, having guardrails for them is a good proposal. I mean, again, we didn't become a great water utility by being cavalier with our water policy. So we need to stick to that. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if we're going to do anything like that, we need to be sure that what we're doing is good for the city and it does help us with, you know, meet our service delivery to our citizens.
When did folks learn on the council about Project Blue?
That's the thing. I didn't know anything about it until I read about it.
When was the first time you heard about this?
It was probably after June, May or June. I mean, but they told me that we'd been talking to them for 2 years and we were under NDAs our people were. And I was like, this is such a bad, when obviously I learned about it when they voted on it, the week prior to them voting on it at the Board of Supervisors. Right. That's when I learned about it, like everybody else. So that was why it was a little weird to me. And, you know, they met with me in my office sometime after that, about a month after that. And I just wasn't feeling the vibe. And so between that and the groundswell of different folks with different strokes kind of all unilaterally opposing, it was a real easy decision to make right away.
What business would be acceptable in an area like Tucson, Arizona, in your opinion?
Well, we built, and that was off Shirley Scott's leadership many years ago, to build that aerospace tech sector and have aerospace and promote aerospace. I'd love to see us continue to prove that. We have a United States senator that's a former astronaut. Those type of enterprises are great fits for us. We also have a contract. We have a large military contractor that can sub out a lot of different aerospace functions. They also help build the F-35, but I think that translates into, I think things are going to change as far as personal transport by air, as far as electric planes. I think all those things are going to change. I also think that the solar and battery industry are also things that are worthwhile for the city of Tucson.
So where do we go? I had Chris Mays with me on the program, the Attorney General, on Friday. She does not feel that any of these data farms, AI centers, are compatible with Arizona, but we're going to have them. Project Blue's already knocking at the door at the town of Marana.
Good luck to them. I don't know if Marana has enough water. I think that's kind of a bluff, and we'll see what happens. But I'm just not going to be I'm not going to be excited to funnel 3,000 acre feet of water to any project and then have them tell me that they're going to be able to recycle it all and then tell me later, well, we didn't include this water, this water, or this water. That's just not going to work for me.
Mm-hmm. The RTA, there's a new development that Mike Ortega, the former city manager, city of Tucson, has put forth. Rather than a 20-year funding program, there would be two 10-year increments. Do you see this? And Mike seems to be confident that he's going to get something before the voters next year. How are you feeling these days about RTA?
Much better. I mean, first of all, I worked with Mike Ortega while he was city manager every day. And what I found out, and oh my God, I've been having a really interesting couple months with my dad, so bear with me on this. Mm-hmm. When Mike retired, I wrote him a note. I said, the only person who knows more about government finance policy and stuff than my dad is you. That's what I told Mike Ortega.
Really?
I have so much respect for the man. So the fact that he came in and built, the fact that he came into the RTA was very settling, I think, for everybody on the council. I have been harping for months and months, probably over a year, about the 22nd Street project. We have a project in the RTA from 22nd Street and Camino Seco to Houghton to repair that stretch. And we've been waiting for a long time for it to mobilize, and we really couldn't get any movement. And with Mike Ortega making the change, I think we got a lot more movement. And I think we got, I think we're right in the good space that we're going to be. So I think I'm really excited about that. For Mike.
Is it something you could take to your people in your ward, do you think, to really sell this program?
It depends on what the I mean, again, Mike's still tweaking that package, but the bottom line is it's going to give us some flexibility with transit. It's going to give us some flexibility with pavement modernization and pavement preservation, which is one of the stickler points for me. I've said for forever, three things. Number one, some flexibility with BRT. So in case we want to reinvest it not to BRT but into transit, that's fine with me. Number two, I really wanted to have, we don't really need new roads. We need to take our existing roads and make them nicer and better. Pavement preservation, I said that was really important. And three, it needed to be a good deal for Tucson where we're getting our fair share of that sales tax. And I think all three of those criteria are going to be met as they roll out this process. I had a really good meeting with Ted Maxwell the other day, and they seem to be, you know, and then Carolyn Campbell's the cohort on that. They've got a great team to build something that's great for not just the city of Tucson, but the whole region.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your dad. Has this been a very difficult time? How are you dealing with the grief? Your dad was such a strong influence on you, a mentor and everything else. How are you dealing on a personal basis, Paul Cunningham?
I think as good
that
as
loss.
I think as good as anybody. I think it's when I, just like now, something reminded me of something.
Right.
Those are the things that you kind of miss it, but that's on my mind a lot. And, you know, my father, I miss him dearly. And some old friends of my parents came into the council meeting on a neighborhood plan amendment on last meeting. And I got a little teary-eyed because I just, certain things just remind you. But I think everybody deals with grief that way. And I remember when you had yours, you know.
Yes, and 2 years ago this week.
2 years ago this week. And
yes,
it is a, I mean, it's the same thing. I can't imagine it's the same, but it's the same type of thing. And so you just, it, one thing that I've accepted that for basically the rest of my life, this is going to be part of me. That this is probably one of the most pivotal, losing my dad is one of the most pivotal parts of my life. And so it was pretty interesting that night because I was at a council meeting and my mother called me and I was like, my mom knows I'm at a council meeting. And then our next door neighbor called. And he called from across the street. He's actually a really interesting guy, Steve. He's a he is a treasure hunter. He is actually a treasure hunter. He goes out and helps companies find sunken ships from World War II. That's what he does. Isn't that the coolest job ever?
Yeah,
he should have him on the show. Anyway, so Steve calls me and he says, you know, Paul, you need to get over to your mom's right now. They're doing CPR on your dad. So I called, I told the mayor and told my team and got in my truck and headed over, and the fire captain called me and let me know what was going on. And we were able to, they were able to get him breathing again, but he was probably gone at that point. But we got him to St. Joe's and the pacemaker and his breathing was helping him. And he died there surrounded by his family and his friends. And the doctors were really good, and I know people have experienced this, but you just have to be happy and that you have loved ones around you, and people were there to rally for him. And my two older sons were with me, and my wife and my mom, and just, It's an experience that will never leave me, Bill.
Do you think that grief counseling would help you? And the reason I bring it up, I've been, as you know, Paul, very transparent. When Ann was diagnosed with the cancer, through her whole journey, and then my grief journey, are you thinking of grief counseling?
I'm already doing it.
You are doing it. Yes, I strongly recommend it for anyone. It helped me, and it's I think it's the way to go.
I just think that we undervalued mental health.
Yes.
For so long. Mm-hmm. And I think that everybody's somewhat fragile with their mental health, and we really want to be aware of that. So I don't know what actions cause other actions. I don't know anything about that. But what I'll tell you is that just being able to talk about things openly and, you know, have that conversation, that candid conversation about things is very, very important, I think, for everybody.
It is. It's something that definitely needs to be talked about. All right, Councilman Paul Cunningham, any thoughts about the election? The Dahl race surprised me. I think it surprised Kevin, too.
I think...
Real quickly.
I think we're really lucky to have such great candidates in all three races. Mm-hmm. And there's a There were definitely, and some of the ones, even the candidates that didn't get a lot of votes, some great people running. It's nice to have that. And, you know, it's not over. There's still a general election. Sure. I think everybody's been kind of dismissive of that, but
yeah.
It's good that we have good Tucsonans wanting to stand for office.
All right, Paul Cunningham. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. We'll take a break right here, midway point of the Buckmaster Show. Be right back.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster, Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch the Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zilkalo Village Studios. Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, 13-acre site. Pretty much everything you could imagine for your garden, and the shops at Zilkalo Village have an incredible selection of beautiful imported items. And, you know, they do have the largest selection of pottery for your garden there at Green Things, greenthingsaz.com and zilkalovillage.com. They are open daily. I know the owners, Jan and Jack, very well and very hands-on, believe that the customer deserves a salesperson who is going to not just point them, oh, that particular plant you're looking for is that way. No, they'll walk you there and make sure you get what you need. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. August 20th is the big day for Tucson to celebrate the 250th birthday of, I guess we would call it the European founding of the area, the city of Tucson. Bill Doley, President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit based here in Tucson, joins us now. And Bill is one of our two dozen contributors for the Buckmaster Show. And of course, his category is what he knows best, archaeology. Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. It's good to be back.
So, Tucson's birthday, are you all in or what?
Well, I think I've told you.
I'm your birthday hat on, so I guess you're not
right.
All in.
Yeah. I'm kind of lukewarm on the idea, but, you know, it's not saying that there's not some interesting history tied to it. And, I mean, basically, an Irishman, serving in the Spanish military visited this area, and he was searching for suitable places to move some of the presidios northward or resituate them or assess where the current ones, how effective they were. And he came to the Tucson area, the area right across the river from what we now call May Mountain.
Sure.
On August 20th, 1775.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the place that he ended up recommending to move that presidio, which was already in place down at Tubac,
mm-hmm.
since 1752, move it northward.
Mm-hmm.
So there's an event, and it's an interesting, way to...
What do you think, Lieutenant, or what was he, a captain? What do you think he liked about this location? The water, certainly.
There was good water. There was, there was a Sentinel Peak, as it was called, as a
lookout
place
point,
for a lookout, a nice place to overlook the valley. But I guess my counter to the Tucson birthday is that if you were to bring an autumn individual sitting here where I am and ask them, how old do you think this place is?
Uh-huh.
They would say it's been lived in by our people since time immemorial.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, I even did a little, internet searching of, how long that term time immemorial has been out there.
And what is it usually?
It goes back in the English language into the 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, what it literally means is ancient beyond memory.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess as an archaeologist, and having had an opportunity to be involved in quite a bit of archaeology here in the Tucson area, what we've learned in the past 40 or 50 years is that time immemorial has a pretty impressive set of numbers around it. We've got continuous farming along the Santa Cruz River, raising maize or corn in particular, for 4,000 years.
4,000?
4,000 years.
Wow.
And irrigation canals have been documented that are at least as early as 3,500 years ago, right down there at that base of a mountain.
That makes the 250th birthday seem like just yesterday.
Well, yeah. You're catching my drift here.
So those are the facts. I mean, mm-hmm. People have lived here a long time, haven't they?
Yes.
And the native people, thank goodness, are still here.
Yes.
And they live on the same land in many ways.
Yes.
And many places.
Yeah. Yeah. And we live on the rest of their land.
The rest of it, yeah. So what might be kind of some of the important lessons to take away from Mr. O'Connor's recommendation for Tucson as a site for a Presidio?
Yeah. Hugo O'Connor or O'Connor.
O'Connor.
If we want to
Hispanicize
it.
Yes.
So, again, in the 1770s, and I even brought a map that you can look at here in the studio, was they were establishing a whole line of presidios, and they started down southwest of us here in Altar in modern Sonora.
Mm-hmm.
They come up to Tucson, and then they kind of zigzag and straight line all the way to the Gulf of Mexico.
To Brownsville.
Yes.
Wow.
So the presidios of the line they're referred to.
Uh-huh.
So I think that the goal was to basically establish a frontier, an edge to the Spanish Empire at that time, and to protect the citizens and the native people that were living south of that area.
Mm-hmm. So looking at this map, Tucson was kind of the northern outpost.
Yes.
Of the Spanish. Mm-hmm. Spanish holdings over in this part of the world.
Right.
Yeah. So with that came a lot of dangers, right?
Yeah, and the threat to people living here all across this northern frontier, the Spaniards and the Indian communities that the missionaries settled around, churches and tried to settle people down and be teaching to be farmers and all that sort of thing. It created targets for Apaches in particular to raid. And that was really the focus of this early mm-hmm. Military presence and expedition.
This was the first militarization of the border. Yes. Going all the way back. And was the goal to, back in those days, of course, people were riding horses. Maybe a day's ride.
That was the general goal of to set these places up so uh-huh. that with a day's ride, you could go to the adjacent
sure.
Presidio kinda and hip, come back, and you're kind of defending your territory
along mm-hmm. the border line. Very interesting. So
key thing there is that this was focused on exterior threats. External threats. The native Apache folks that were raiding were coming from the north and crossing this line. And so it was saying, you know, stay north of us, or we're going to protect people on our interior to the south of us.
Mm-hmm. What's the focus nowadays?
Well, I don't know. We recently saw troops in Los Angeles. Just a couple of days ago, they've shown up in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Those are internal focus. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a really important, you know, thing to keep in mind that, you know, Tucson has a birth in a militarized zone. But it was a different kind of formula back in that time, and one that we as American citizens actually think of our military as protecting us from external threats.
Mm-hmm. Interesting point. Bill Doley with us, President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest. We will be right back.
Congratulations to KVOI's own Hall of Fame broadcaster Bill Buckmaster, who's been nominated as Best Radio Host in the Tucson Weekly's annual Best Of competition. To vote, just go to TucsonWeekly.com. Voting ends August 28th. So cast your vote today and help Bill Buckmaster win Best Radio Host. And catch The Buckmaster Show every weekday at noon on 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Just looking at the midday temperature over in Silver City. Oh, it's pleasant. 82 degrees. And overnight lows now, starting to see some 50s. That is really, really nice. Great getaway, about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Start your planning now by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. And that's really nice weather to do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness. So there's a ton of outdoor activities and some really great places to eat as well in historic Silver City. Bill Doley is with us, our contributor on archaeology on the Buckmaster Show. And Bill is knows a little bit about archaeology. It's kind of his passion, his lifelong passion. Bill is the President Emeritus and Senior Advisor of Archaeology Southwest, a nonprofit based in Tucson. But for years, you guys have been associated with running some archaeology camps in the Silver City area. So when I say there are some good places to eat in historic Silver City, you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Yes, we just had another very good successful field school session there in Silver City this summer. So,
and I mentioned outdoor activities, but the museum at Western New Mexico University has the finest, I think you could say this, finest collection of the Mimbres pottery in the world, and it's beautifully displayed, right?
It is. It's a
so it's nice, a great indoor activity.
Nice building in easy to circulate in a really nicely
lit. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's beautiful. Yeah.
Highly facility.
All right, Bill, you're on the board of a nonprofit called NACO Heritage Alliance, based at a former U.S. military post built in 1919 that was described, I guess, in a newspaper headline at the time as a human fence along the border. That kind of plays into what we were talking about in our first segment with you about how the Spanish, within a day's ride, pretty much established these outposts from Arizona all the way to Brownsville. All the way to the Gulf.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
No, the theme of the borderlands definitely carries through both of these segments here. And this fence, human fence along the border, was that same concept of placing, you know, small clusters of people.
Yeah.
In this case, it was, there were 20-some buildings there, a couple of quadrangles, and 100 troops were there, detailed in the 1920 census, and all of them were African-American Buffalo soldiers.
Huh.
And they were led by a white captain, and there was also a white surgeon or medical officer there. Mm-hmm. So again, the place is an incredible facility that's being actually improved and brought back to, you know, so it'll be able to be occupied by museum facilities, offices, community-based facilities, as well as a focus on some of the really critical issues of the borderland.
How did the Buffalo Soldiers, do you have any idea how that name came about, Bill Doley?
You know, I'm not going to do that well. There's a couple of
generally of what was
stories.
The,
I mean, they go back into the 1800s. They were used by the military in
post out of Fort Civil Huachuca, War
yes,
era. Yeah,
out of Fort Huachuca, for example, to pursue Apaches. And I think it was actually the name comes from the native perception of these black individuals.
Oh, okay.
So, but as a board member, I need to get a better answer to that question the next time I get
so a chance. So this Camp NACO was basically right on the border.
Yep. It's about literally 700 yards away from the border. Mm-hmm. And the nonprofit that is now, you know, running that operation, it's owned by the city of Bisbee in terms of the facility, but we're partnering with the city of Bisbee. I call it an emerging nonprofit. We just had a strategic planning session a couple months ago and came up with a mission statement that I think expresses, you know, something with a small footprint but a big ambition. Their mission: we reveal hidden stories of human experience in the borderlands by engaging communities, preserving the past, and educating the world as students, as stewards of Camp NACO. So we're fixing up some buildings and creating a place to, you know, work out of. But it's the stories of the borderland that are the important stories.
And there, one obvious one would be the role of African Americans in the U.S. military.
Exactly. I mean, it's always shocked me to be aware that there were African American military units since the Civil War onward. Mm-hmm. But until after World War II, they were always segregated before that.
Wow.
It wasn't until Truman, after World War II, actually integrated the U.S. military.
So Camp Naco is going to have a kind of a major physical rehab, a facelift, and in these times, you can't rely on federal funding for any help, right?
Right.
Pretty much.
Right. And the good thing is that they received over $8 million of money from the state of Arizona, and also over $3.5 million from the Mellon Foundation. So the rehabilitation effort that's going to, it'll be finishing up next year. So I really wish I could urge people to go down there and visit, you know, right away. Mm-hmm. But it, in the meantime, while that rehabilitation is going on, the Mellon grant allowed a fairly generous funding of a whole set of fellowships.
Really?
And so the Alliance recently announced a dozen fellows who will be working over the next 12 to 16 or 18 months. If people want to see the full range, the Camp Naco AZ, CampNacoAZ.org, and then fellowship will take you there. But just a couple of quick examples. Two of the fellows are going to be making films, dealing with Buffalo Soldiers in one of them, and in the impact of the Mexican Revolution on the area around Naco.
Mm-hmm.
several of the studies are going to be focused on food, and I love this one. It's a woman's going to create a bilingual picture book titled "The Buffalo Soldiers Sing Sad Songs at Night," and there'll be public murals and other things. So it's exciting. I mean, I'm an archaeologist, but in working with historians and other folks, particularly the artists and their creative approach to history and engaging community. It's really exciting. And a lot of the folks, these fellows are from across the line. So they're actually, from the Mexican side of the border.
Well, this has got to be uplifting for you, kind of building a common ground for a dynamic nonprofit.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of gets you going.
Well, I've spent my whole career in the nonprofit world, and I find nonprofits exciting places that you, as an organization, decide, you know, what your goals are, what your mission is, and then you figure out a way to move that mission forward to accomplish it. So it's challenging, but it's can be incredibly satisfying to, you know, organize the people and move things forward. So this isn't fun after stepping down from leadership of Archaeology Southwest to find other young nonprofits to work with has been really exciting.
And not beholden to the federal government for funding, and that can have its advantages. Look what happened at the Smithsonian just today.
Yes.
Where they were given 120 days to remove all stories that the current administration doesn't like.
Right. It's actually the White House is somehow going to, you know, assess what they see and designate what must go, I guess. I, you know, how it specifically will work. But it underscores how the value of these small nonprofit like Naco Heritage Alliance telling the stories as they are.
Yep.
And sharing them widely is going to be a real necessary offset to the kinds of impositions that we're seeing coming down from the government.
All right, got less than a couple of seconds. ArchaeologySouthwest.org, your website.
Please go, and you can sign up for a Preservation Archaeology Today, a free digital.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
All right, have a great day, everybody.